Welcome back to Camden Cast, your unofficial Baltimore Orioles fan podcast from CamdenChat.com. I'm your host, Mark Brown, and we are recording this episode on June the 4th, 2015, in the evening. Earlier this afternoon, the Orioles finally broke their five-game losing streak. They avoided getting swept by the Houston Astros. Adam Jones, of course, with the clutch eighth-inning home run in the 3-2 win. I am joined once again by my podcasting partner in crime. He is Alex Conway. Alex, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. Much better after the win, even if it's only one win in the last six games. But pretty good. Enjoying a nice cold Natty Bo to my right.
Ain't the beer cold?
It is. It is.
This would have been a much more depressing podcast recording if the Orioles were on a six straight games losing streak. So I'm glad they weren't, because I really don't like to do recordings when it's that deep in the in having problems. And really, the last time they had a six game losing streak was 2013 in September, and so there really haven't even been many Camden casts in the wake of six game losing streaks. It wasn't much fun being an Orioles fan for the last week, and we don't want that.
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted this out, but it was just like, once they just lost leads, I just, you know, it was just that feeling, you know, I just feel content, you know, I know what's going to happen.
Like, especially in this Astros series, because their bullpen is just absurd.
Yeah,
it's but just like, even before that, just any of the games, it's just like, oh. Because it would be like they would score in one inning and then they were done.
Yeah, it was that one against McHugh, the one I recapped. They scored four in the second inning against him and they got two base runners the rest of the game, and one of them forgot the number of outs.
We will have more on that topic a little bit later. But so a big part of why the Orioles have been struggling lately, the offense is just, I don't know what to say about it. I mean, obviously the results are not so good. They have scored two runs or less in 13 of the last 25 games.
Aren't they like 1-19 in such games too, or something?
I think that is correct. When they score two or fewer, they are 1-19. Because obviously, if you only score two runs or less, you're not going to win many games, and that's just the way it is.
Because your pitching staff can only give up one or zero, so. And that's hard for a pitching staff to do, especially one like the Orioles, where they don't have a bunch of shutdown ace-type guys.
Yeah, they haven't been bad, but they haven't been so good that they can carry an offense that is scoring one or two runs, or zero, per game.
Yeah.
You just can't. You can't expect your pitchers to be flawless, because nobody's going to be flawless. Except for freaking Dellin Betances on the Yankees with a zero ERA on June the 4th here, but...
Oh yeah, I know that he's on my fantasy team. So
well, that's lucky for you.
Yeah. I picked him up off the waiver wire last year. Feeling pretty good about it.
The Orioles have some interesting arms, but they don't have anyone who has struck out 49 batters in 29 and a third innings.
No, they do not.
That's a lot of strikeouts.
You know, and it's frustrating.
But yeah, so that
they had the one game this week where Brock blew it up, and he had been pretty good lately. And then Wright had the one big inning, and you know, it's been a very frustrating week of baseball. Even in the game against Tampa, they scored five runs against Odorizzi, one of the better pitchers in baseball, and Tillman gave up nine or whatever. The pitching staff gave up nine.
One of the games earlier this week, I don't remember which one, but in the pregame show that they pointed out that the Orioles have the second most losses when scoring five or more runs in all of MLB. They've lost, like, I want to say it was seven games where they scored five or more runs, and the only team with more, and this is as of it was probably as of Tuesday, maybe Monday. So this might have changed a little bit, but the only team with more was the Rockies, who had lost nine such games. And that's probably, you can probably lay that on Coors Field.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking, I was looking at the schedule. I mean, that makes sense, because I just remember they would have those slugfests with the Blue Jays. It's like they lost to the Blue Jays 5-12, 7-10, 6-13, 6-7.
I wonder how many of those games were started by Chris Tillman, because I feel like it's probably a disproportionate number.
I think it's Chris Tillman and Bud Norris are probably the majority of those kind of games.
Yeah. So that's not good either. I mean, I don't think on the whole, the pitching is not the problem, but there are games where it is.
Certainly. And, you know, there are guys that, you know, Tillman, if this team's going to be better, Tillman's going to have to perform better. I mean, that's 100%. I mean, that's got to happen. I mean, you know, Tillman got a little pub this week as a guy that's struggling mightily, and people aren't, because, you know, he's never been a sabermetric darling with the FIP ERA differential and a guy that depends sort of on weak contact and command and control. And so, I mean, I don't really think it's a problem of him just not having it anymore. I think it's a problem of his command is off right now. His walk rate's sky high. If he's able to bring it back down, I think he can still be good for the Orioles. But, you know, I don't think he's done.
He's presently not doing well, but that doesn't mean we'll give up on him forever.
I'm not going to put the nail in Chris Tillman's coffin after 2 months of poor performance.
Yeah, his track record over the last 2.5 seasons has been pretty good.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think last year he struggled in the first 2 months similarly.
His career numbers in April and May have certainly not been as good as his numbers in, like, June through August.
Yeah.
Let's see, last year he had a 5.68 ERA in May, so he just seems to have some kind of problem early in the season. He had a 5.68 ERA in May despite one of his 7 starts being a complete game shutout. Actually makes that even more impressive.
That's very impressive.
Yeah.
Now that I think about that, that's pretty crazy.
So he had that, and then he had 6 starts where he went a total of 29 innings and gave up 24 earned runs last month.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if Chris Tillman will turn it around, but I think that there's enough evidence in his body of work that he will be better the rest of this year or at some point this year. And you'd have to hope so for the Orioles pitching staff, because I know Gonzalez, Jimenez, and Chen have all been good. But with, I guess, Norris is now coming back, but he was terrible. He's been terrible. And I don't know. He just looks so not sharp.
The main thing with Tillman, you got to hope he figures it out, because they're going to keep running him out there.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
until they can get him with the Dan Duquette pothole maker.
Yeah. I mean, Tillman's going to get till probably August to figure it out. That's basically what Jimenez got last year.
Norris, we're on a wing and a prayer. I guess his most recent rehab start, he went 4 innings, which was the plan, because they want him to be able to start on Sunday. So it's not like he only went 4 innings, because normally you hear, oh, a starter only went 4 innings, that's bad. But that was the plan. He actually didn't give up any hits and only 1 walk in his 4 innings for Norfolk on Wednesday. And they pulled him early so that he could start on a day shorter rest, probably on Sunday for the Orioles in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And really, that was his only remotely decent-looking outing since spring training began.
Pretty much, yeah.
Because he looked bad.
Yeah, he's struggled a lot this year, even in spring training. You know, his fastball command looks bad. You know, he's not striking out as many people, and the lefties are killing him again, which is what he was able to minimize last year, especially with throwing that changeup. But this year he's been not able to do that and has been paying for it.
He had the best year of his career last year, and, well, he's sure not following that up with the great effort so far.
No.
I don't want to say great effort like he's not giving effort, but his results poorly are poor so far.
Definitely. And, you know, I mean, yeah. I like Bud Norris enough, and I think he can be a good enough guy for the back end of your rotation. You know, and this stinks for him, and it stinks for the Orioles. You know, he's going into a contract year. He wants to get one last big contract at 31.
Right. He doesn't want to be bad. he wants to put his best foot forward so that some team will give him the most money and years possible. So, yeah, it's not ideal for anybody, and I don't know that we want to jump and say, well, his 1-4 scoreless innings in Norfolk means he's figuring it out, but literally his other two rehab starts, he got, like, totally bombed.
Yeah, he got pretty shelled.
So even one positive thing is more than he's had since, you know, the middle of February when spring training was getting underway.
Yeah.
It's basically, I think every spring outing was bad.
Yeah, he got shelled in pretty much every one of them. And then tried to say it didn't matter. And
right, then they'd be given quotes to the beat writers like, well, when the lights turn on, it'll be different. You just got to get that competitive factor going.
Wrong.
These are the things you say because you need to say them to yourself to believe them, but that doesn't mean they're true.
Yeah. Yeah, so and the bullpen's been better of late, but they're, you know, they've been helped lately, I think, by, when they put Gausman got the tendonitis, and they're going to move him back to the AAA rotation, allegedly, and then when they DL'd Garcia, they've been able to sort of cycle through, like, two new guys every once in a while, so I think that's really helped the bullpen.
Right, we had Tyler Wilson up, made a couple outings out of there on top of his one start. We had
Oliver Drake.
Brief appearance of Oliver Drake.
Who was good in his first couple of appearances and bad the next couple.
He's walked six guys in 7 2/3 innings, I believe, and that's why Oliver Drake has been sent back to Norfolk.
Yep, and then I guess Chaz Rowe is still around, which I know we have talked about, you and me, but it's surprising to me because he got absolutely destroyed all throughout spring training, and he's actually been really good for them so far.
There's one pitcher every spring training who just gets, like, torched in every spring outing, and you just figure, okay, this guy's the sacrificial lamb. They're just having him pitch some meaningless innings in spring training, and we'll never see him again. I would have bet a significant amount of money that Chaz Rowe was that guy for this year. And I don't know what's different for him from now compared to spring training. I guess maybe he was having bad luck in spring training and he's having good luck now. But
he's still good. I mean, he's striking people out. He's keeping. Yeah, I mean, he's looked good.
Even when they called him up, I figured he would be a guy that they would just, like, DFA 3 days later because they didn't care about him.
Yeah.
And now it's like, well, Chaz Rowe, we can't just get rid of Chaz Rowe. He's in six games now, and he's yet to give up a run.
Yeah, especially since I think they've been pitching him multiple innings. I mean, that
yeah,
case
he's gone 9 1/3 innings over six games worth of pitching. So,
I mean, that gives you something. You know, it gives you a 2-inning guy is nice to have.
Striking out over a batter per inning, 60% ground ball rate so far. Now, of course, this is small sample size and all. It's an encouraging.
It's what you're going to get is a small sample size.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean those are all good numbers, you know. It's another guy that you can, if you can just ride his hot hand till he doesn't have it anymore, and then it's a guy, you know, a guy like Chaz Rowe is a guy you don't really care about losing. You know, he's, you know, last year it was Preston Gilmet.
Right. Because when they called up Chaz Rowe, there were a lot of people who were like, well, why didn't they call up Steve Johnson? Why do the Orioles hate Steve Johnson? And of course, I like Steve Johnson just because he's a local guy.
Yeah.
Of course, his dad pitched for the Orioles, and
yeah.
Steve Johnson had some memorably solid appearances in 2012 to help seal the getting into the wild card business. So, you know, I understand the fond feelings for Steve Johnson, but I think the reason they didn't call him up is because they actually care if they would lose him, because they can't send Steve Johnson down without exposing him to waivers.
And he's having a great year in Norfolk, striking out everybody. So I think he's a guy you're only going to make a spot in the bullpen for him if you're pretty sure you're going to be able to keep him around for a while.
Right, and so probably they would want to maybe have him be available for next year and not try and force him into the picture this year.
Or injuries.
In between injuries, exactly.
Something like that. Like, if there's a major injury in the bullpen, maybe you bring him up this year kind of thing.
Right, like, knock on wood, if like, Tommy Hunter experiences some kind of catastrophic injury, which I wouldn't wish on him. I hope doesn't happen.
Of course not.
Pretty
of course
much
not.
that's the scenario that would result in a Steve Johnson appearance, where if you know someone is like out for the rest of the year.
Yeah. It's not like, Tillman just pitched 1 1/3 innings. We need an extra guy.
Right, because here's the thing about Chazrow. As good as he's been so far, if he has two bad outings and he just looks like he's completely forgotten how to pitch, they can DFA him, and who cares? Because it's Chazrow. No offense to Chazrow and anyone, friend or family of Chazrow, but that's just the way it is.
That's just the. I mean, that's the.
That's the kind of guy that he is.
I think he gets it. I think he's been on two or three teams the past 2 years, so it's just kind of when you're that level of guy, it sucks, but that's kind of your life.
And I mean, who knows? For all we know, that it was something working with the Orioles coaches that has given him a greater perspective on life.
It seems like a guy they liked, because like we said, he got bombed in spring training, but they still gave him a spot in Norfolk. I mean, clearly Duquette or Showalter or somebody in the organization likes something about him.
And we've seen it so far. I mean, you know, limited sample, but that is more good major league outings than I would have imagined Chazrow had in him.
I'll agree with that. So, yeah, I'll definitely agree with that.
Which, I mean, I'm a very bad judge of this. I don't know anything, and I will always freely admit that, because I always distinctly remember watching 2012 spring training games, and there was one that just had, like, the scheduled Orioles pitchers was just like a list full of nobodies.
Sure.
And one of the nobodies was Miguel Gonzalez. And I remember writing something like, I will be completely stunned if anyone who pitches in this game appears in an Orioles uniform once the regular season starts. Because why would I have thought, okay, Miguel Gonzalez is going to come up and be be in the rotation? And I don't remember who the other guys was, but I just remembered Miguel was one of them, because I felt stupid about that later. But how could anyone have known? I don't think even the Orioles could have known at that time.
Yeah. No. Did you see the other day, earlier this week, the Eno Saris had a thing on Miguel Gonzalez? Or it was not really on Miguel Gonzalez. It was on, like, the top pitches in the league. And Gonzalez this year has one of the better, like, one of the top five or top ten changeups for, like, whiff rate. Because I guess the splitter gets classified as a changeup. So
I did not know
He has been even better this year than he has been in previous years, and he's been pretty good in previous years. So I mean, yeah, it's like you said, you never know what you're going to see in a spring training game, or who's some scout in the organization's like, sign that guy to a minor league contract and let's see what happens.
Right, like they brought Miguel Gonzalez from the Mexican league.
Yeah.
And they just
You don't see a lot of Mexican league guys. The Mexican league's a pretty weird league with weird rules about its players, but you still don't see a lot of guys getting bought out or called up from it. So it's pretty crazy.
And
but he's been good.
You know, that's kind of the Dan Duquette philosophy in a nutshell, really. You never know when one of these guys will just be doing well. And then you've really made a good find there.
It's one of those things where, like I said, you know, you see a guy you like somewhere and give him a shot. And that seems to be what the Orioles do a lot of. And, you know, the last couple of years they've been able to hit on a lot of those guys, which has been good.
I mean, go back a few years. It's not quite on the same level of player since he got actually a multi-year contract. But like Wei-Yin Chen, the Orioles will have him for 4 years and about $15 million is the total amount they will end up paying him.
Yeah.
So just imagine if every baseball team had known how Wei-Yin Chen would pitch in 4 years of big league action. Like, you know, he probably would have gotten five times that much.
Oh yeah,
four or five.
I think it's safe. I mean, he's gonna be a free agent. I think he's probably looking somewhere around $575 on the free agent market.
Any team could have signed him when the Orioles did, but it was the Orioles who did, and good for them. Although the other adventures in that part of the world have not gone as well for Dan Duquette.
Have been bad.
But just the fact that they paid off for Chen really makes the failures worth it.
100%.
So far.
Yeah.
You know, you only need to hit on one to make your non-successful ones worthwhile. And I think course, we go to a different part of the world. We got Cuba. Dan Duquette is always signing these kind of mid-20s Cuban defector guys who maybe aren't going to really be anything, but he's only paying them all like that. Generally, I think they've been getting like $750,000 as their bonus basically, or less. So, I mean, you know, you can sign 10 of those guys, and if 9 of them fail, but one of them turns into a guy who's on the Orioles for 5 years, then you've still won.
You've been successful.
Now, we haven't seen him hit really with one of those Cuban guys yet, but he will eventually, and then it'll work out.
Yeah. I think Daryl Alvarez is a guy that you could see probably later this year or next year. He got him for, like, I think he was the most expensive one, like $825,000 or something. So nothing too outrageous, but yeah.
It's worth a shot. So anyway, none of those guys are going to help the Orioles this year. And the Orioles this year, well, they could use some help, as you've surely seen if you've been watching or listening to games, or if you are bereft of both of these things for whatever reason, just following them in box scores. However you follow the Orioles, you probably get the sense that, man,
a sense of dread.
They need something to happen. Now, as it turns out, the day you are listening to this podcast, or the day it's brand new anyway, they will be getting some help, or hopefully some help. Matt Wieters will finally be back in the Baltimore lineup. I shouldn't say that with certainty, because you never know what will happen, but he's currently expected to be back in the Baltimore lineup for Friday, June the 5th, joining the team as they arrive in Cleveland to play the Indians. And, I don't know how he's going to do, but they could sure use him to do well.
Indeed. Yeah, I mean, Caleb Joseph was, like we had talked about, he was hitting pretty well for the first month and a half, but he's tailed off a bit as he's been asked to do more of the full-time catching duties. And so I think with Wieters coming back, I think it definitely gives you, I mean, Matt Wieters is a better hitter, I think. I mean, I'm pretty sure of that. Defensively, Wieters probably got the better arm. If you want to get into pitch framing stuff, Caleb Joseph's been really good. Matt Wieters had been good in the past, and more recent years had been pretty bad. Who knows what he's going to be like this year. If it's something maybe the Orioles have been working on, I don't know. But I think Wieters will definitely give the lineup a boost at the very least.
And really, they need the boost because, I mean, I don't know if they would stick him right in there and say, okay, Matt, you're our cleanup hitter, but, you know, Delmon Young, the cleanup hitter, is not so
ideal.
Not going to work.
Notwithstanding
his two home run game against Jake Odorizzi, which is the only two home runs he's hit all year.
Yeah. Yeah. Delmon, I mean, his power is just, whatever power he had left has gone away this year, which has been making him even less valuable than normal. So I think Wieters will add some pop, some good pop to the lineup. He's relatively patient, so those are both good things. I think, you know, Buck will probably slot him in somewhere between 4 and 6 would be my guess.
Of course, Wieters being a switch hitter gives you some flexibility as far as you don't stack all your righties and all your lefties together, because he can be either one. Although, if memory serves, he's much better as a righty batter than a lefty batter.
Yes,
in his career.
He's much... Although last year it was flip-flopped, which was one of the exciting things about last year until his elbow blew out. Or it wasn't necessarily flip-flop, but he was much better batting left-handed last year, which was exciting because that would
That was like the missing piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, his elbow blew out.
His elbow blew out. But, yeah, he had a home run yesterday in Norfolk. So... You know, hopefully he'll. I don't know what to expect. My expectation right away would be nothing super great, just because, you know, he's missed a lot of time. He's really only been in extended spring training. He missed a lot of spring training against even, you know, 3 innings of major league guys. So I don't know if I would expect him to come out pedal to the metal. But I think, you know, it seems like they're going to start out catching him every other day. Flipping him and Joseph, and I think that'll be good for the both of them.
Yeah, Joseph could use some rest, and I mean, I don't know that I believe fully that why he's struggled at the plate is because of his workload, but I've heard that advanced on like the TV broadcasts and whatnot, and it seems like a plausible enough reason, because I don't think he's ever caught for that heavy of a workload in his career, probably. And you know,
well, yeah, I mean, I wrote that article on Monday, did the research. I mean, last year he caught the most games of his career. So I think it's, yeah, I think it'll be good for the both of them. And I think if Wieters can get some bats in at DH, I think that'll be good for him at the plate. We'll see how long they end up having to do it, how long they're comfortable with doing it. Because I think if you do it, I don't know if it's something I would do for the rest of the season kind of thing. But we'll see. We'll see. I think it might be more interesting to see if, because of the so-called the plan, I guess, at this point to alternate them, if they carry the third catcher for a while or not.
Speaking of Baltimore products, who everybody's fond of, we've got Steve Clevinger, who, honestly, I don't know why they didn't have him on the roster all year to begin with, because it's very clear they were unenthused with Ryan LaVarnway. I mean, you could almost tell that probably a week and a half into the season.
I hadn't really remembered much of Ryan LaVarnway from his Boston days.
I remember he hit like two home runs in the one game the Red Sox won in that 2011 series at the end of the season.
Okay.
I think that was like his one crowning good series in his life.
Yeah. So I didn't remember if he was necessarily a good or bad defensive catcher. You know, in watching him, he didn't seem like anything special. I had just assumed that he was significantly better than Clevinger because they picked a non-roster guy over him. And then he didn't look that much better than Clevinger. He looked significantly worse than Joseph behind the plate. And he couldn't hit. So I don't get why they chose him. And, you know, and now with Clevinger up, Buck's batting him fifth and sixth in the lineup. So clearly he likes his bat.
But, like, the thing with LaVarnway was, not only did it seem like he was bad, but it seemed like the Orioles knew he was bad, which is why they never played him. So if that's the case, like, why didn't they just DFA him at the end of April and then bring in Clevinger, you know, May the 1st or something? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know either.
He must have had a reason, but I don't know what it was.
Yeah, so I think there's a chance they keep Clevinger around, but I think with the Mattis suspension coming up, and I think it'll be hard to carry three catchers
Thing right now is, especially with J.J. Hardy maybe being sort of uncertain.
Yeah, that too.
I feel like they are... I mean, I don't know that even if J.J. Hardy was fully healthy, if Dan Duquette would be sitting in his office waiting to catapult Everett Cabrera into the Inner Harbor, but that might be what I would do. Because I don't think he adds anything to the team.
No.
Okay, he's a guy that can stand at shortstop with a glove.
Pretty much. But at this point, you could ask, I guess, Flaherty didn't look too bad when he was playing over there. Just kind of where he looks everywhere.
So, like, our scenario for keeping Clevinger is, like, probably Cabrera gets chucked, and then Steve Pierce is your second baseman, Ryan Flaherty's your shortstop if Hardy gets hurt. And of course, if Hardy goes on the DL, they can, I guess, call up Ray Navarro again, and then they have a real infielder. But
yeah.
I guess if they're worried about these nagging one-day, two-day injuries, they don't want to have to rely on the Pierce-Flaherty middle infield double play combo too many games, which I certainly can't fault them for that.
No. I was thinking maybe they would try Machado at short, Flaherty at third, Pierce at second, or like Davis at third, Machado at short, Pierce at first, Flaherty at second, or something like that. Moving Machado to short rather than, but they appear to pretty much never want to do that and just keep him on third base and let him be a third baseman, which I can't fault them for that either. But if Hardy's going to have like nagging one-day injuries where you don't want to put him on the DL, it might be a little bit better to put Machado at shortstop rather than Ryan Flaherty.
That ship has sailed for whatever reason, I don't fully know, but I'm not a doctor and I have not looked at Manny Machado's medical records, so I don't know if that's the reason why they don't or what.
But they don't.
They don't, and that seems like a plausible reason. I don't know that it, that means it is the reason. But Yeah, it just seems like Manny will never be a shortstop, and that's the
Yeah.
way it is.
Yeah, pretty much.
Of course, Mattis suspension, it seems like they're dealing with by they called up TJ McFarland, and he will be the token non-Britain lefty. And also, they needed a long man, and now they have one, so that's good.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, McFarlane, a guy like McFarlane gives you. Lefty, can throw three innings, sinker baller guy, you know, good guy to come, a good sixth, seventh guy in the pen, which is exactly what he's going to be for, I don't know. Did the Brewers guy suspension appeal ever
I
come
don't
in?
think they have handled that yet. And in fact, Mattis's might even get done first because they just have arbitrary timetables on that. Like they did the, I think they did Mattis's hearing like over Skype or something.
Yeah, I
and
think
it
you're
was
right.
just like Duquette and Mattis and Buck were in a room in Houston, in the Houston stadium, and whoever the heck they were talking to at the headquarters in New York, like
Yeah.
just over some kind of internet communication. I think they did that on Wednesday, and they're expecting the suspension to get handed down on Friday. So I don't know. Maybe they'll cut it down to like six games. But either way, they
Yeah,
will be Mattis-less.
I was trying to see if, because I mean, like basically him and it was the Will Smith was the Brewers guy. If they had, you know, they basically got the same suspension for the same thing. So I was, if he got his reduced, if Mattis could get his reduced, I don't know. We'll see. 8 games is kind of a lot to go with. Only a 24-man roster, but
Yeah, I would be surprised if it doesn't get reduced a little bit, just because that seems to be the way that stuff always goes. Like, when they appeal, it's like, if somebody got suspended for 3 games, they'll be like, oh, okay, you only have to get suspended 2 games. And in many cases, that seems to be how it goes, especially if you're not a starting pitcher. Because, of course, the standard starting pitcher slap on the wrist is 6 games to make sure you miss one start.
yeah.
So they can't really reduce that, given that that's what they always do. But for a reliever, they don't have that lower limit they must adhere to.
No, we'll see. I mean, I'm not gonna miss Brian Mattis too much, I don't think.
It is hard for me to imagine a scenario where Brian Mattis is like just think, even if he's gone for 7 games, what would it take for you in a game for you to think, man, I really wish Brian Mattis could play in this game right now?
Maybe
Like,
if
it's
maybe
too
if
bad
David
we
Ortiz
can't
was up.
play Brian Mattis right now.
Maybe if David Ortiz was up.
Are they? I don't think they're supposed to play the Red Sox anytime.
No, that's the playing the Red Sox right after the Indians.
Oh, that's right, on Tuesday. The
yeah,
9th.
Rock
right.
Hashtag rock the Sox.
Ah, you might be right about that. That might be when we will regret not having Brian Mattis.
Probably not.
Personal.
I think last time they faced Ortiz doubled off of him, so.
That's true. There was one time where he gave up one towards the end of last year. I remember that.
Yeah.
So that's about the only scenario. And, of course, it turns out that probably 3 of the games he will miss, they'll be playing the Red Sox. But maybe it
so
won't matter.
TJ McFarlane could get him out, too.
Probably. David Ortiz not doing so hot this year. And, of course, now that I've said that, he's going to hit 5 home runs against the Orioles. And
of course.
That will be when he starts
like,
to turn it around.
I've thought and said for the last 2 or 3 years about him, the same thing as the Yankees. Like, well, they're just getting older, so they have to get worse, right? And then they seem to never do.
The dark magic that fuels these teams has not expired yet. David Ortiz, by the way, has a 304 OPS against left-handed pitching this season.
Oof.
It was a 129 average with a 127 on base percentage and a 177 slugging percentage. You don't often see the OBP below the batting average.
Nope, that's hard to do, but it can be done.
That is in 63 plate appearances.
Ouch. It's
8 for 62, and I guess the one is one sack fly in there.
Yeah, that sucks. Yeah, and I know some of their other guys have been struggling too. Hanley Ramirez hasn't been great lately.
Really bad in the field, Hanley, from what I have seen from some of the angst on Red Sox Twitter.
I mean, just watching even the games with the Orioles, I mean, I've never seen someone look so bad in the outfield. He just looks so Like, he just looks so unnatural out there.
I mean,
like, he
really,
just
I think even Steve Pierce looked better playing off the wall out there than Hanley.
Yeah, 100%. I don't know. It's odd. You know, you'd think someone be able to make that transition who's been playing baseball all their life, but he just cannot read a fly ball.
I think that cost them today. Thursday, they gave up like four runs to the Twins in the ninth inning.
Yeah, they did.
In part because of...
Well, one of the errors, I think, was on a bunt.
They got Sandoval at third, I believe, is having some defensive issues, and then you got Hanley in left a lot of the time. Like, that's your left side of the field. You got, if it's on the ground, you might have Sandoval mess it up, and if it's in the air, you might have Hanley mess it up. That's...
I mean, Hanley Ramirez played a, like, easy out for Ray Navarro into, like, a triple or a double. Camden Yards, that's Ray Navarro. So, and he had a couple in Boston where they just like hit off the wall and he just totally misplayed them completely. And he's been bad. I think he's been one of like the worst defensive players ever.
Hanley Ramirez, before going into today, our defensive run save number for Hanley Ramirez is minus 11 runs.
That's
with only 367 and two-thirds innings. So that's like a quarter of a season worth of innings, pretty much.
And I forget the conversion rate.
UZR at minus nine.
I think it's like five runs is technically like a win or something like that. So like he's definitely cost them games. You know, you could at least say that. He's cost them games by playing left field. And, you know, theoretically he makes up for it by his offense, which... That's fair, but I think he's been not great offensively lately also.
His slash line for the season is a 259 with a 307 on base, 471 slugging. So that's good power there, but your on-base percentage is not ideal, and batting average not so good either. Although his batting average on balls in play is a 248 when his career number is 330, so maybe he's been unlucky.
Yeah.
But he is... I mean, he certainly helped cost the Red Sox the game today. And I'm totally fine with that.
100%.
Because if the Red Sox are bad, that's good. It cannot be bad for the Orioles if the Red Sox are bad.
I was looking at the Rick Porcello Fangraphs page the other day and chuckling.
The $87 million man or whatever they gave him.
With a 5 ERA. Yeah.
5.01 ERA, and he's due $82.5 million over the next 4 years after this.
I can dig that. I can dig that.
One thing we have seen over the last week or so is that the AL East is maybe starting to separate a little bit, which to the detriment of the Orioles being 4.5 games out. But while they still have the shortest distance from first to last of any division in baseball, with the Red Sox in last being only 5.5 games out, we have some daylight between the top two and the bottom three spots. The Yankees presently in first, only 4 games above 500. The Rays are 1 game behind them, and then you've got Blue Jays and Orioles both at 4.5 games back, Red Sox at 5.5 games back. So, I mean, it only takes, you know, one of these teams having a losing streak, one of them having a winning streak to reshuffle that, but... If things stay as they currently are, you know, that's 3.5 games out from second is some separation there.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, I think if you, in the first 2 months and some change, the Rays and the Yankees have definitely played the best, which I wasn't expecting at all, but they've definitely played the best ball. I mean, yeah. Yeah, the Yankees had a little pretty bad stretch, but they've seemed to turn it around of late.
Got Masahiro Tanaka is back from apparently not needing Tommy John path after all.
Yeah, yeah.
Although he was on the DL with a wrist thing, I guess, but I was still not convinced his elbow wouldn't explode. But
And it probably is just like all pitchers' elbows on its way to exploding at some point in the future.
Right, but it doesn't seem like it's going to be any day now.
No. And then the Rays have just, you know, outpitched everybody, even with, I mean, they've had some terrible injuries this year so far, and they're still, you know, in it and out-pitching people and scoring runs where they need to.
So we'll see how that continues to play out. Of course, the Orioles heavy on the AL East in the first month of the season, and now they've been experiencing some other baseball teams, although we're about to get back to the Red Sox.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that it's the AL East rankings are going to stay that way, but the Orioles definitely need to start winning some games. I know that the beat reporter brigade every night tries to remind everyone of how many games back the Orioles are, but you know, I'm not sure how many teams that were at 6 games under 500 at one point in the season have ended up to win their division.
Even in a supposedly weak AL East year. Like, I mean, think about it. The Orioles just lost 5 straight games for today. So they would have to win the next 5 games right now just to get back to 500. And then you're still talking, okay, whatever, to get up to first. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
You're talking a lot of games, you know, and I, you know, you can keep telling me how many little games back they are, but at some point they have to win games. I don't care if it's only June 4th. There's still, at this point, 3 teams ahead of them, I guess, or they're tied with the Blue Jays, but
they're going to need to start doing some 2 out of 3, 2 out of 3, or rip off a long winning streak, which, I mean, even last year when they won the division, I don't believe they were especially ever having a long winning streak.
No, I think their longest winning streak last year was 6 games, and their longest losing streak was 4. So they were just really good at not being bad for a long time, and
they've already failed at that this year.
Consistency. It's one of the things in Major League Baseball that is underrated on the player and team level. That's how you become a really good player and a really good team, is just being consistent and being able to adjust.
This year they've already got 2 separate 5-game losing streaks.
Yeah, and I don't think they have a winning streak above 3, I don't think.
I believe that's correct, and in fact, they went all of May without winning 3 in a row.
Yeah.
That's hard to do. Their longest winning streak, Saturday, April 25th to Wednesday, April 29th, 3 games. I don't want to say never, because never say never, but you're not very likely to win a division or a wild card spot or much of anything if you only ever win 3 games in a row maximum.
I think you could say that pretty comfortably. You will not go to the playoffs if your highest winning streak is 3 games in a row.
So I don't know if the changes that are coming up for the Orioles will settle things down or what, but they need to, or we're just going to be kind of never really fully out of it, but never really in it.
I think clearly right now they have to improve on the offense, and you know, maybe Weeder's coming back, maybe Davis, Jones, and Pierce turning it around a bit of late will help. I know people are clamoring for some guys at AAA, but, you know, I don't know how much Chris Parmalee is going to come up here and help the team.
Yeah, he's been raking, but then, like, what do you do? So, okay, are they going to get rid of Delman Young and then have Chris Parmalee play, like, right field instead? I don't know. Maybe that would be better, but...
And maybe. I mean, the thing with Parmalee, I mean, he's done really well in AAA, but his splits are crazy. I mean, he crushes right-handed pitching, but he can't really hit lefties, so what are you going to do? Like, put him at first base against a righty and D.H. Davis? Maybe.
I guess if they decide they've had enough of Travis Snyder. I mean, I've had enough. Well, I don't want to say that I have, but I'm currently frustrated with Travis Snyder for his boneheaded...
Just about everyone is.
The kind of ultimate toot bland thrown out on the base pass like a nincompoop from Wednesday's game. I mean, I have not seen many worse than that. In the non-Alexi Casilla category, that was probably the worst toot plan I have seen.
Just atrocious.
Just casually jogging to second on a fly ball when there's one out. And Buck was slinging some fire about that in his post-game conference. Yeah. Rare to see Buck kind of call out a player, but I believe the reporter's quote that I saw from him was that they said Kirby told him 8 times and Bobby was holding him up, and it is just unacceptable to make that kind of mistake, which is true. But for Showalter to be that hot about it, that he said something to the media about it, I don't recall him really doing that very often, if at all.
Yeah, I don't either. So pretty surprising, but definitely one of those things that I think would frustrate Buck as much as any of the fans.
Because, I mean,
and
really,
yeah,
the
Snyder just
hallmark of the
hasn't.
Orioles in his time has been they don't make those kind of mistakes.
But they definitely have been this year.
Yeah,
a lot
a
of it's
lot.
Just like the, a lot of the, like, you know, Delman Young overthrowing the cutoff man, and Travis Snyder threw to the wrong cutoff man one time, or you throw the wrong base. I mean, that stuff matters, you know. Not cutting off the ball before it gets to the wall. It's little stuff like that that, you know, the players they had were very good at, and the team overall was very good at preventing. And so far this year, they have made too many of those mental errors, and it's cost them, I think, definitely.
One person who memorably made one of those kinds of mistakes was Alejandro Deaza, and he's been cast aside.
Thank
I
goodness.
I think his cardinal sin was that time he got thrown out at third base when Chris Davis was at the plate, and he just really he had no reason to go.
Not at all.
And
but...
and he did, and he got thrown out because the Orioles should never try and steal bases at any point in time ever.
They should not.
Just don't run ever. Don't run. No one should run on the Orioles, and the Orioles should never run. So anyway, Deaza got DFA'd, and they actually managed to trade him to the Red Sox before his 10 days of limbo was up. And they got a live baseball player in exchange for Alejandro Deaza, which I
yes.
personally was very surprised by.
Definitely. The original reports were that they just traded Deaza for cash.
Which made no sense and never made sense because already if they traded him, the Red Sox would have been eating his salary. So why would they give back the Orioles even a token amount of cash given that? I feel like whoever reported that just... Obviously, one, was wrong, but two, it never made sense and they should have thought that in the first place.
Yeah, so the Orioles got Joe Gunkel.
What a name.
Good name. Good bullpen name.
I mean, obviously you hope he's not going to be bad and you say he's pitching like gunk, but, you know, maybe if he mystifies with an arsenal of, like, soft-tossing stuff, you could say he's a gunk baller, and then that's, like, cool, and that's his thing. He's ready.
Yeah.
He just needs to get his chance. No, but so he was a... drafted from the powerhouse of Westchester University of Pennsylvania in the 18th round of the 2013 draft. But apparently at least vaguely intriguing in as that sort of thing goes. He
More intriguing than anything I would have thought the Orioles would have got.
Right, exactly. He's had a very kind of bipolar minor league career in that when he's been a reliever, he's done very well. And when they've tried to have him be a starter, he has not done so well. For instance, so far this year, he had started 10 games for the High A Salem team for the Red Sox, and he had a 4.64 ERA through 10 games. So if you've got a 4.64 ERA in 10 games at High A, you know, you don't have much of a future. But last year when he was... I'm sorry, he hadn't pitched yet this year. Why hadn't you pitched yet this year, Dougal? I'm confused. But anyway, he wasn't very good as a starter last year. And he was good as a reliever. So if they stick him in the bullpen at Frederick or Bowie or whatever, and he continues
to do
decently well at that, which maybe he will, maybe he won't, but they've got a guy with a chance to show them what he's got. And that's more than they had from Alejandro Deaza, who I was over.
Yes. So, yeah. Yeah, he's been up at he's split time between Double A and High A this year.
Oh, I don't know why his stats aren't on Baseball Reference then.
I was just looking at his minor league baseball page, but he's got 5 starts in 12 games, so it kind of just seems like they're using him as a spot starter in there. And but you know, he's a guy. He's got a pretty good strikeout rate, a pretty low walk rate. Apparently he's a righty again. It's got some sidearm action, so it seems like a guy that's probably going to be better out of the bullpen. I know Baseball Prospectus scout Tucker Blair linked a scouting report from him last year that Tucker saw him and on his Twitter account, and you know, he's a guy throws 89 to 92. With a changeup and a slider, Tucker didn't seem to think too highly of him. His realistic role as an organizational player. But, you know, who knows? Who knows? Throw him in the bullpen. Give him a shot.
Do you happen to know if that scouting report was the day when he was throwing in relief or whether he was starting?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. I'd have to ask Tucker. Maybe.
Like, so he does have a decent strikeout rate. Like in his professional debut in the New York Penn League, which is your short season A. So that's a long way from the big leagues. But he struck out 32 batters in 20 innings in his professional debut. So, you know, there's a guy with, again, a long way from the big leagues. And I guess as a college draftee, he was a little on the advanced side for the New York Penn League, but you know, there was some success out of the bullpen, and he showed that really at low A last year, and I think he showed it when he was a bullpen guy in his stops this year also. So maybe he will find himself into the picture. Doesn't have to be on the 40-man after this season, so they could even have him just slumming around in the minors next year at no real consequence to them. And, you know, who knows? Maybe something will happen with him, maybe not.
Exactly. So I did a little sleuthing. I looked up his game log from last year. So that was a start that he saw him. So maybe his fastball would play a little bit higher out of the bullpen, changing the scouting report a bit.
I mean, that's not a guarantee. I don't know.
No,
but
it, not at
just
all.
Looking at his stats, it's very clear from his results. He has done well as a reliever and best as a start.
When I look at minor league stats, especially for pitchers, I look mostly at strikeouts and walks because it's something that they can control the most. Because even hits in minor leagues, because the fields can be so bad,
and the fielders,
your defenders can be so bad. So you know your catchers can be bad. So if you're really going to look at anything, it's like those two things. And maybe like how many extra base hits they give up or something like that if you really want to get like fine-tuned with it. But, you know, you got to like that he strikes out a lot of people and that he doesn't walk a ton. And from there, like you were saying, you know, if you make him there, you don't have to put him on the 40-man roster. But if you do, he's a guy with three option years that you can make that seventh guy in the bullpen that, you know, like we were talking about with TJ McFarland, just he comes up. When you need him, he goes back down. When you don't need him, and you got a decent arm, and you got a decent arm for essentially nothing in Alejandro Diaz, who you had already cut.
They didn't report the amount. They did say that Orioles sent, quote, cash considerations to the Red Sox. I don't think I've seen the amount, but I'm guessing it was maybe in the realm of $1.5 million, which is half the money Diaz is owed the rest of the year.
Maybe.
I mean, it could be more than that. Could be less. He was owed, I think the number was about roughly $3.5 million left on his deal. So the Orioles probably ate some of that. I mean, maybe they ate as much as $2.5 or $3 million, but you know, any savings they got, and they got a live player. So,
yeah,
you know, speaking of live players, they got in trades this year, the guy they got in the Ryan Webb salary dump, Ben Rowan, is actually not done terrible in the Orioles minors so far. He recently got promoted to Norfolk after having a pretty nice little stretch of games at Bowie.
Yeah. And again, he's another guy that you could definitely have it as an option coming out of the bullpen. Sidearm and righty. More of like a submarine style from what I've read about him. So, be interesting.
So, I mean, again, if they get something out of that, I mean, at the time, and I think we even said as much on this podcast, it was like, well, why did they just get rid of that draft pick? But, like, if somehow Ben Rowan turns into a major league reliever who's not terrible, or if they get anything at all out of the catcher they got in that trade, Chris O'Brien, like, that's probably better than the whatever they would have gotten out of the number 74 draft pick.
Yeah, probably.
So, you know, one of those things where Duquette knew what he was doing. Maybe he'll get lucky. Maybe it'll blow up in his face. But so far, Rowan looking nice.
Yeah, and O'Brien looked, he looked really good hitting early on. He has struggled mightily recently, but I think he's got like some of the most crazy splits I've ever seen. He hits like 300 against righties, and like 130 against lefties or something this year. So he might be a guy that wants to give up switch hitting sooner rather than later. But, you know, again, he seems like an interesting guy. He, you know, from most of what people said, a backup major league catcher is probably his role. And
which, again, likely more than you would have gotten out of the number 74 overall pick. Just from likely. The odds.
Yeah, true.
Much as the, you know, you want to think, okay, everybody you draft is going to be a future big leaguer. That's just not how it works.
No, but I think the other thing is with the way the draft works with the draft pools.
Right, that I don't remember the exact value of that, but
it was like $900,000 or something, right?
Non-trivial amount of money. So that's true. Yeah. That's one.
So you're getting rid of that money, which you could have theoretically drafted a guy in 26 that fell to that spot for a variety of reasons and been able to offer him more money, which, you know, now the Dodgers get that right.
Dodgers not hurting for money.
No.
Probably more than any team in baseball right now. Have they gone up to number one in payroll? I'm pretty sure they have.
Yeah, they're number one.
The rich get richer, but maybe it'll be okay for the Orioles. We'll see. Time will tell.
Exactly.
We've done a decent job of segueing over into draft talk when that was the last topic we wanted to get to tonight. So for those who don't know, or if you do, the Major League Baseball's June amateur draft is starting Monday the 8th in the evening, and the Orioles will be picking at number 25 overall, because it turns out when you're not terrible, you go lower in the round, which is totally cool with me.
Indeed.
Especially since the Orioles didn't exactly make the most out of their top five picks. Well, Manny Machado was a good pick, but we've yet to see the star power of, for instance, Dylan Bundy and Kevin Gausman, both of whom were in the top five. Yeah. You also had Brian Madison, Matt Hobgood were in your top five.
Matt Wieters.
Yeah, Matt Wieters. But, I mean, that was a good outcome for a top five. Yeah. Although less than we hoped
Yeah. But still, he's probably been a pretty good, like, above average top five selection in his career, would be my guess.
Yeah.
For total value wise.
So yeah, so they will be picking at number 25 because all the other teams that were below them either gave up picks or there weren't many teams below them to begin with. So who are they going to pick at number 25? Well, nobody knows. Literally nobody. Nobody.
Literally nobody. Not even the Orioles know.
They probably have a list of guys they hope for, but they have no idea who out of that list will make it to them.
Pretty much. Especially, you know, if you read, if I don't know how much anyone besides me reads up on the draft, but this year in particular is one where, I mean, even the guys going number one aren't a certain thing. So it's not a very good draft overall, and it's not a very deep draft. So I think after about the top five picks, I think there's a lot of names that could go anywhere between 6 and 26. It seems like from just reading around the mock drafts and the analysis and stuff like that. So, you know, the Orioles could definitely get a name that they like down there. And I think a lot of teams will probably be happy with who they end up getting because of just how sort of muddled it all is.
So obviously at number 25, you're not going to get a guaranteed future star, because if they were a guaranteed future star, they wouldn't be there at number 25. If everyone could look at them and say, okay, this guy is the next Mike Trout. And Mike Trout, by the way, was a number 25 overall pick.
Which should tell you everything you need to know about the MLB draft.
So if everyone knew Mike Trout was going to be Mike Trout, he would have been number one, the end.
Yeah.
But people didn't know. And it was the Angels who took the chance, and the Angels get their reward. So good for them.
Exactly.
But, you know, there's guys that you're going to get a guy who has some flaws for whatever reason. And I think in Mike Trout's case, the flaw was they didn't get to see him a lot because it was a rainy spring in New Jersey or whatever.
Pretty much.
So that was what made him risky. You know, and New Jersey in general is not considered a hotbed of baseball talent. So
he fell. Basically,
you know, he wasn't playing like the best players in the country in his high school games.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Orioles, well, they're not going to get the next Mike Trout at 25. I guess theoretically they could, but they won't because that's just how it works. But,
Yeah.
you know, they
And
could get a
so,
guy with flaws who they can polish into something, or
yeah. Maybe get a guy coming off an injury. There's a couple of pitchers like coming off a Tommy John surgery that are predicted somewhat to fall. Like the Duke guy, Mike Mantuella, Brady Aiken, the number one overall pick from last year.
Yep, those are both guys who've got some Tommy John. They're recovering from Tommy John right now. In fact, they wouldn't be able to pitch right away.
So, you know, if you could definitely take a fly on one of those guys and hope that you get a top 10 talent at 26, because they got to wait a year to rehab before you can start really putting them into minor league games. Or, you know, there's, you know, it's a crapshoot. There might be some high school players down there, but I would say more than likely you're probably looking at a college guy who's got more polish to him, who's fallen a little bit. And
one of the guys who's been on kind of, I think Kylie McDaniel on Fangraphs' most recent mock draft had the Orioles taking a lefty from the University of Virginia, Nate Kirby, who I believe when the spring started was kind of seen as a top 10 pick, and he had a strained lat muscle, and he hasn't pitched for 2 months. So, like, if you're going to get good value out of your 25 pick, it's maybe that would be a guy where that would happen, because if he tumbled down draft boards because of that injury and teams didn't get to look at him in his draft year as much, then the team that decides to pick him, you know, if they draft him and he is what he was before that injury, then you've probably gotten better than you expected out of your 25 pick.
Yeah. Yeah, and lefty with a good fastball. A lot of times when people do these mock drafts, and, you know, sometimes it ends up being the case, the lower in the round, like around the 20s and stuff, is that a team will go with a guy they've seen more often than a guy they haven't seen more often. So Nate Kirby being so close to the Orioles, pitching at Virginia, is probably a guy that they've seen more often. So
it's easier to go look at him than it is to go look at some of these other guys.
Yeah, not that they don't have like the organization to go do it, but it's a guy that you've probably seen more just by nature of geography. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. I know what Keith Law's most recent draft. Scott Kingery, or Kingery, however you want to pronounce it, second base prospect out of college.
From University of Arizona. And Keith Law offered the analysis that he thinks the Orioles will go bat over arm because with Dylan Bundy and Hunter Harvey both hurt, who could blame them? And, you know, there's that one saying, there's no such thing as a pitching prospect, which isn't actually true, but sometimes it feels like it is. And if anybody's proof of that, it's really the Orioles.
Yeah. Yep, so it could be interesting. He's like again, you know, you're going to get a sort of flawed player down here. So he's a second baseman, and, you know, second basemen aren't really considered all that great prospects.
He's listed at 5'11", so basically he's not your future power hitter.
No.
You're going to have a guy who you can hope he's got some speed and defensive ability and that he can hit enough to be worth it, and, you know, he would be more of a spray it around the field guy than a drive it guy.
Yeah. Which, I mean, if you can be an above average defensive second baseman and do those things, you can play in the major leagues. Again, it's like one of those guys. That's really what you're looking at. You're not looking at, you know, even with Hunter Harvey was what, the 16th pick or something like that?
It might have been 18, but I'm not 100% sure. I will.
Like they hit pretty well on Hunter Harvey already. I mean, he's injured, obviously, and we don't know how. But like, even his prospect status alone, like, they've gotten more trade value or whatever you want to call it.
Harvey was the number 21 prospect before this season by Baseball Prospectus. Yeah. Now, not every organization had him that high, but okay, he was the 22nd overall pick. We have bad memories, Alex. Hunter
Very
Harvey.
Bad.
But, if you get a top 100 in the game prospect with the, you know, early 20s, mid 20s, late 20s, you've already done.
You've done pretty well.
I mean, obviously, you still got to get value out of him either as a trade piece or with the team. But it shows you you scouted well, and
Definitely. So there's
you even developed them a bit already.
Yeah. But I can pretty much guarantee you that Scott Kingery is not going to be Mike Trout.
I feel fairly safe in saying that, especially because a college player is even less likely to surprise you, I think.
Yes, that's definitely true.
You know, because a high school guy is 3 years younger, and, you know, he could still grow, he could still fill out, whatever. And, you know, Scott Kingery is probably going to be 5'11 for his entire professional career, if he's even 5'11, because often those guys get like an inch or two bumped up from their actual height.
So, we'll see. It'll be interesting. I'm going to miss Bud Selig mispronouncing Los Angeles on the
Oh,
did
yeah,
you ever
it will
watch
be
the
the
draft?
first man for a draft, won't it?
Yeah, yeah. Do you ever watch the draft? He'll say, Bud Selig would always say
Los Angeles.
Los Angeles. He would say, like, angle. The Los
Selig
Angeles.
tried to turn the NFL draft into, like, or the NFL, the MLB draft into, like, the NFL draft where he's announcing all the picks, but
yeah.
It's just.
They tried. I mean.
It's more of an event than it used to be.
Definitely
a few
true.
years ago, the Orioles would have this thing called Blogger Night that they don't have anymore, which is sad. But they would let us come and talk to like one of the players. And the 1 year I got to go, they let us have a little group interview with Adam Jones on the field after the Orioles took batting practice. And it was around the draft time, and somebody asked him what it was like when he got drafted, and he was telling us about how he found out because he was in government class in high school. And his phone buzzed, and his teacher let him go out in the hall and take it, and it was his agent saying he'd been drafted.
Yeah,
So, I mean, even, you know, Adam Jones isn't, like, ancient, but even as recent as Adam Jones was drafted, the draft was so different that, you know, he was in school, in high school, in class when he got drafted, as opposed to now it's this primetime event.
As recent as, I think, almost 5 or 10 years ago, the entire draft was conducted over speakerphone. And that's basically, if you ever watch the later rounds of the draft, that's basically what it is. They have the speakerphone on as the audio, essentially, where it'll just be like a guy every 30 seconds chiming in with, you know, the Baltimore Orioles select random high school's shortstop in the 38th round.
Yeah, they keep it moving. It's like 1 minute between picks once you get outside of the second round.
So June 8th, Monday, will be...
They're going
to the
end of...
competitive balance round B.
Yeah, so they're going through pick number 75 on Monday. And then Tuesday will be rounds 3 through 10. And Wednesday will be 11 through 40.
Yeah, and if you've ever seen that, it's basically just a guy in a... Like, the coverage of it is, like, one or two guys talking about every, like, 20 picks because they go by so fast.
Yeah, and you start getting, they are picking guys that not even the guys who've extensively researched as many players as possible have ever heard of these guys.
They're picking, like, the GM's wife's cousin.
I watched the 3rd through 10th last year because I had to do a bunch with Camden Chat and I needed to hear the picks. And it was like, shoot, I forget who the dude is, but it was whatever guy works for MLB and Jim Callis would be on there. And there was one other guy, I forget. What the heck that guy's name is? Jonathan Mayo.
Jonathan Mayo.
And then another guy and Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo. And they're just like, you know, they have like 30 seconds after each pick is named to try and scramble through their papers and like find anything at all to vaguely say about any of these guys. Because, you know, it's just, you know, that's what you're getting in, you know, round five of the draft. You're probably not getting a future star. Although, obviously, every team, well, not every team, but every draft has some late-round guys who end up turning into be very good, like, players.
It's just random. but yeah, I'll be paying attention. And while the MLB draft is, I think it's funny that, I mean, I don't even really know why I pay attention, because stuff with, like, the NFL and NBA draft is you can get useful players in those drafts sort of late and in the late rounds, and they're going to be playing right away.
Right. You can feel reasonably confident that most of the draft picks are going to at least be on the team the next year. Whereas
Major League Baseball, you expect to see them in at least 2 years.
Even your number one overall pick is probably 2 years away. At least. You know, if it's
At
some
least.
high school guy, he's probably got 4 years, even as
Yeah,
good as
three
they
or
might
four.
think he'll be.
Yeah. So, it's one of those things where you can read as much as you want of all the mock drafts and get all the names and have it all planned out, and then you got to wait 3 years for any of that stuff to actually matter.
If they even reach close to their sunny side of outcomes, because
yeah,
as we know, being Orioles fans, you don't get the best case scenario all the time,
no,
or ever.
Yeah. So I think, you know, it definitely this draft will be more interesting than the last year's draft where they didn't have a pick until 90. So it'll be good. I think they'll have three picks on Monday.
Yeah, so the first day, yeah. Monday night, they are going to pick three times. They will pick at number 25, they will pick at number 36, and they will pick at number 68.
Yeah.
So. And the Orioles are off on Monday. So if you get to MLB Network, you could tune in, and maybe you will see the next great Oriole get drafted. I imagine the Orioles are not going to draft anyone who will be sitting there in the studio.
Probably not. I don't think they bring in that many guys.
I think they bring in maybe 12 guys or something like that. I would be surprised if any of them get down to the Orioles. But you'll hear the name read off, and maybe that will be the next good or even great Oriole, because you never really know. But probably it will not be the next great Oriole. Just that's the odds. Because, again, they're picking at 25. All the surefire guys are long gone. That's just the way the baseball draft is. It is a slow, slow process. And maybe someday one of them, well, hopefully more than one of them will be big leaguers.
You never know. You never know. Tim Barry, pitching for the Bay Sox right now, 50th round pick.
Yeah, the 50th round, there isn't even a 50th round anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, they don't even have that anymore. So
they cut it down to 40 when they brought in the new draft rules, and they could probably stand to cut it down more.
Yeah, probably.
It's like you said, once you get into those late rounds, it's like you're drafting all the family members of your people.
Pretty much. I mean, you're just trying to fill out the Aberdeen roster at that point.
Just for instance, Orioles bench coach John Russell, his son was drafted in the 32nd round of the 2012 draft by the Orioles.
Steel
Russell. That's a good name.
Good name.
Not so good of a baseball player. In three minor league seasons, he has a 4.96 OPS.
No, but
he's the big league bench coach's son, so he'll probably be able to catch in the Orioles organization for as long as he feels like getting buried in the minors. They always have him in spring training too, but I mean, that's who gets drafted in those late rounds, and you know, that's just the way it goes. The baseball draft, it's weird. But maybe we'll get some Orioles, some future Orioles, maybe some future prospects, some future trade pieces, whatever. Dan Duquette does love trading his marginal prospects.
He does. So,
for good or ill, but I'm not.
It'll be names to read about in our minor league rundown every morning.
Yeah, or at least once they start playing. Some of them will go to the Gulf Coast, some of them to Aberdeen, I guess. But
yeah. One of the benefits of the new draft system, one of the few benefits, is that they moved up the deadline to signing in July. So it's basically a month after the draft rather than 2 months where it used to be. So you actually will get be able to see the guys the year they're drafted, whereas the old draft system, that wasn't necessarily the case because a lot of the big guys would take it all the way down to the deadline to get as much money as possible.
Right.
So then they wouldn't be signed and have everything passed until mid-August. And by that point, all the minor league seasons are over, basically. So this system, at least you're able to, you know, they're able to go to Aberdeen for 2 months or the GCL for 2 months and actually play some games that first year and get some development and tutelage.
And hopefully the big league Orioles perform well enough that we don't even have to worry about who they drafted and how well they're getting developed so far. Because
hopefully,
you know, one good thing about the Orioles being good is, you don't need to be always looking to next year. Although I have a feeling, I have the sinking feeling that may end up happening this year. But the last few years, we have not needed to be feeling like, oh my God, who are they going to draft? Because we need help. Hopefully next year's not one of those years. But we'll see. Maybe they'll turn it around. Maybe. We'll find out. But Alex, we're getting towards the end of our time. Do you have any final thoughts on the Orioles at this moment in time, 11:12 p.m. Eastern, June 4th, 2015?
Start winning some games.
That's very simple and succinct advice. The Orioles do indeed need to start winning some games.
I don't care how many games back they are right now. It's still too early to worry about that anyways. Even if they had a big lead, it's still too early to consider that. But, you know, like you had said, win 2 out of 3, win 3 out of 4. I don't know if they can, but that's what they need to start doing to make this season more interesting and to stave off my, reading minor league box scores every day and wondering what free agent they'll sign.
The Orioles would need to win 2 out of 3 games in 5 straight series just to be .500 at the end of that.
Ugh.
So, that's like you've played pretty well if you've won 2 out of 3 games for a stretch of, 15 games, and then they would be .500 now.
Yeah.
And then you've still got to go wherever from there. So,
yeah.
That's pretty tough.
It's tough, but they've, win games.
They've got guys coming back. They've got Weeders coming back. Maybe Norris is doing whatever, and Jonathan Scope will exist again at some point in the future, I would imagine. So
be nice.
Just don't fall totally apart and start clawing it back. We'll see how it goes.
You got any final thoughts?
My final thought is I am still hoping Matt Weiders comes back and has the contract year to end all contract years. I really thought he was going to do that before the season started when I was seized with optimism that, he was actually going to be on the roster for opening day.
Yeah, well, we were all working with false information.
We all were. And maybe I should have known better than to believe that information, but I certainly wasn't the only one. And, Weiders still has June through September to, and maybe even October, to put together a mighty campaign to take into his free agency. And I hope he does it, because the 2015 Orioles need it, and, it would be good to see him do that also, which would probably then lead to some other team overpaying him in free agency, but that would not be the Orioles' problem at that point.
No, it will not.
But yeah, for the 2015 Orioles' sake, I hope Matt Weiders just comes up and contract year to end all contract years. And that's what I'm hoping to see. That's what I hope starts as soon as tomorrow. Maybe he'll hit like 2 home runs off Sean Markham or whatever. I don't know.
Let's do it.
All right. So that's all the time we have for tonight. Make sure to check in on camdenchat.com throughout the day, every day, for all of our interesting articles, some of which are written by Alex and I, some of which aren't, but they will all be interesting. And you can follow us on Twitter at camdenchat. You can follow Alex himself. He is at AlexConwayCC. Did I get that right?
Yep, that's it.
At AlexConwayCC, if you would like Alex's occasionally bitter denunciations of the Orioles, but maybe that will be getting more cheerful.
Maybe.
You can get my bitter denunciations of the Orioles at Camden Chat on Twitter. And you've got us on Facebook, facebook.com/CamdenChat. But don't read the comments. Unless you're really curious, but you don't want it. Don't read the comments. But do like us. Just because we would like it if you like us. And again, you can always find our interesting things on CamdenChat.com. So make sure to tune in there. So that's all we have for this evening. So for Alex Conway, I am Mark Brown. We're bringing you Camden Cast. This is Birdland, and we are out.